Are computers smarter than people? It seems like kind of a dumb question, right? Like, of course. A computer can think of things in four-dimensional space. It can calculate millions of things a second. And even that's, like, really outdated numbers. Computers are very, very smart. Not in the same way that people are, but in a very strange, alien way that we can't possibly understand, because we're just not on that level. How did we get to that point? I mean, computers weren't always smart. It's not like they just popped into existence, which means that there must have been a point in history where people and computers were around the same levels of intelligence. Well, we're going to be talking about that today. I may not have time to plan out an audio and scenario, but I do have time to talk about a very niche, weird, passionate subject, and that is a very, very small slice into the history of computer chess. Specifically, a very small slice of that in Deep Blue, which is a computer chess algorithm, program, whatever you want to call it, that is very, very famous. Very, very famous for taking on the best chess player in the world and completely changing people's perception. Deep Blue was a computer program with humble beginnings. It got made fun of. It was a joke. But it rose up to being one of the strongest opponents in chess. It was the 1980s. Feng Xingshu was a student who was studying chess-playing computers. Chess-playing computers were a popular thing at the time. Because they weren't very developed, there were tournaments that would go on where people would bring in these little chess devices, these massive boxes the size of refrigerators, and they would have them duke it out in the game of chess. They would bring them over to these tournaments, and they weren't very good, we'll say. They could definitely beat some human players, but they were not very consistent. Computers weren't exactly that developed at that point, so playing a game as complicated as chess was difficult for a computer. Xu had some bright ideas, though, and he developed a special chip which he felt could do pretty well. However, upon telling higher-ups, they laughed at him, and they said, "Ha! This is a dramatic retelling, but maybe it was accurate. You fool, Xu. You bring in this chip? Come on, no one makes chips like these anymore. Come on, just make something like everyone else does." Xu was not happy with this set of words that was said to him, so he decided to go off, literally move away, and develop his first chess computer, humbly named Chip Test, to test the chip. It was just a test for evaluating different chess positions, and he decided to take it to a computer tournament. There, Chip Test would duke it out with the other computer chess players, where it would probably lose, in all likelihood. But Xu was feeling pretty good about things. He lugged it in, rolled it on over. He didn't really test it out or prepare it, did not have time to, but that was okay. He was going to throw it in and just see what happens. Now, with computer chess programs, there are two different types that they could be. Now, you don't really need to understand chess or even, you know, computers to really understand what went on through the history of this. But with how primitive chess and the whole computer dynamic around it was, you kind of had to make choices. You could either have a chess computer that made very short-term decisions or ones that made long-term decisions. And that was kind of a very difficult choice. Do you want your computer to make strong immediate moves? Or do you want it to be strong in the long term? But if it couldn't make strong moves in the first place, then what's the point of trying to go for long-term plays? Doesn't make any sense. So with this, a lot of chess computers would often play the best move available for very short-term time, which led to them being very, very bad against human players because they couldn't really look ahead. And the ones that could look ahead couldn't really do anything about it. Xu, on the other hand, tried to combine those approaches into one slightly. It wasn't very good at either, but it was trying something different. It was unique in some form. Chip Test was special. And even though Chip Test had no experience playing in a computer chess tournament, even though it had been fully made not a week prior, it still got to the finals, where it played against High Tech. Now, if you couldn't tell from the name High Tech, this was an advanced chess computer player. This was one that could search, you know, hundreds of moves per second, maybe. It could go wild. Chip Test, by all means, should not have stood a chance. However, it won. Xu later described that as being, you know, partially luck. The opponent's computer, high-tech, was probably more skilled, but Chip Test got lucky, and it won. And that was a big deal, because that showed that even though it did take some luck, it could beat it. And this was on very primitive hardware. This was without testing any of the bugs, going any deeper than just the surface-level investigation. So, Shu had something special on his hands. He began to go to more tournaments. He began to upgrade Chip Test into bigger and bigger programs. Back before, it could only test maybe 1,000 moves per second. Now it could test 10,000. And imagine what it could do with a better computer system behind it. Shu was making this computer out of scrap metal and garbage. Think about what they could do with a little bit more funding. Think of what they could do if they won more tournaments. So Shu went to more tournaments. And he got a reputation for himself, because Shu was a rage gamer. So Shu would go over and Chip Test would find a line of moves that would win every time, and then he would scream out, "Yeah!" Became kind of a screamer in that way. Or he would lose and kind of rage against his opponents. It's kind of a whole time. This cycle continued quite a bit. They gained more team members and everything, and from this very small start, Shu and Chip Test had been climbing the ranks. They were starting to be something special. Shu kind of realized that he had the choice of pursuing this computer chess player that he had created, or he could pursue an actual stable job. He had offers of joining printing companies that would be wildly successful, and he had other ideas. He knew he had something special, something unique, and while it had a very low chance of actually turning out to be something great, it was a chance, something that would mark him in history forever. He had the chance to live a successful life or go for glory, and he chose glory. He could tell that he was on to something. In the 1990s, he continued to improve. Chip Test ditched its original name and instead developed the name Deep Thought. Deep Thought. Remember that name. It's going to be important later. Now, Deep Thought was just a more developed version of Chip Test. It was stronger, it was better, it had new algorithms, they had hired a grandmaster to help them. Shu was not a chess player. Shu was not a chess player, and most of the people on his team working on Chip Test, and now Deep Thought, were not chess players, so they didn't actually understand what made a board good or not, they just knew how to analyze and add it to their computer program. So theoretically, if there are problems that you would need to understand a game of chess to understand, then they were going to be in trouble. This is what we call foreshadowing. Deep Thought kept getting better. It was a good computer. However, it was inconsistent. This was at a time where computer programs were not very good at doing things. They had bugs everywhere. They would crash randomly. Pretty often, in the middle of matches, Deep Thought would just kind of crash, and they would have to reboot it and just hope that it would work. Sometimes it wouldn't really properly analyze the new board, and it would just lose from that. Or sometimes it would play such unexpected moves that it might even gain an advantage. Maybe. That would be unlikely, but it could happen, theoretically. These crashes were bad, nonetheless. These were problems that needed to be solved, and they weren't really easily solvable. It started to become one of the best chess machines to exist. Now, while a Chip Test, the original incarnation of this new Deep Thought, could maybe test 1,000 possible moves, 5,000 possible moves, 10,000, quite a bit. You know, I personally couldn't think of 10,000 possible moves in chess. At least not in 1 second. Deep Thought had improved to almost 1 million moves. It could test 1 million possible moves per second. That's so many. So it got pretty good. It got pretty good. And people were starting to get afraid. Deep Thought was just getting better. It kept winning. And this was around the time where movies like The Terminator, RoboCop, stuff like that were coming out. It was the start of a robot revolution. People are starting to get afraid that technologies might actually be able to do stuff that we can't, which is scary. Noticing Deep Thought's success, a certain company called IBM began to show interest. International Business Machines, IBM. This would change things, because before they had no funding, practically. They were going off of scrap parts, and yet they were still destroying the competition. IBM joining into the fray? This was going to be intense. IBM was joining for a very specific reason, though. They wanted money. Can you imagine how good it would be if this big corporation could say that they had the best chess machine in the world attached to them? That the best chess machine was running on their hardware? That would be very, very good. So IBM joined. This was great. And they wanted to take down a legend using the software. Gary Kasparov was the best chess player at the time. It wasn't even close. He was a beast. That was quite literally his nickname. Gary Kasparov bended the entire environment of chess so much. Gary Kasparov is one of the more well-known grandmasters of chess. He was impressive. Articles would revolve around him. He was a lot. You've probably heard of Gary Kasparov before. Even if you really don't know much about chess, it's just one of those names and one of those people that they rise to such a level that their name gets intrinsically tied to the thing they're known for. Gary Kasparov was a big deal. So, deep thought, this program, which was pretty impressive and could beat a lot of other computer opponents, went up against Kasparov, who promptly bullies it into losing. It didn't stand a chance, really. Computers are smart, but they're nothing like humans. They can't see chess in the same way that people can. While we can think 30 moves ahead to what our opponent will do and what we might do and everything, and only focus on the really important plays, because we know what's good or not, a computer has to manually go through every single situation. There are a lot of chess possibilities. 1 million moves per second tested might sound like a lot, but it doesn't matter if 99% of those are ones that you don't really want to pursue. You only really want to see one, and while a person can look at a chessboard and know what the best play is, a computer has to manually go through everything. And even then, it might not properly see it, because it has to weigh everything in its own mind, and it just can't think like we do. Deep Thought played like a computer, and you can play anti-computer chess. Computers have a lot of issues. They're very materialistic. They think that, well, if I got a better board than my opponent in terms of pieces, then I must be winning. Chess computers are very smart, but they're also very dumb. This seems like a good time to bring up some of the faults in computer chess at the time. While we might be able to pull up a program today and see it playing absolutely wild, they kind of had a predictable pattern back then. They would just try and trade up in pieces until they won and just checkmate if they saw it. It was a pretty simplistic way to play. You just trick your opponent into making plays that are immediately valuable, and maybe you sacrifice your queen or something, and they're like, well, my opponent can't win if they do that. But they're wrong. You can. Gary Kasparov could think differently, not this weird materialistic mindset that the computer could think of. You didn't have to win by much in chess. You could be down in pieces, you could be losing completely in terms of how much material you had. That didn't matter, you just had to win the game. Computers had trouble realizing that. One of the funniest examples of how a chess kind of misconstrues what happens on a chessboard, and to show just how really not smart they are at their core. At some point, it was tested to see if you could feed a bunch of very high-level chess games into a computer and let it learn from that and see what happens from there. This is pretty similar to neural network learning that we have today, which is insane. But what the computer chess would do after it got fed a bunch of these high-level games is it would open up its beginning bits and it would take its queen out, which is the most important and valuable piece in chess. The queen can do anything, really. And it would pull it out, and it would immediately sacrifice it, which would make it lose every single game. Why did it do this? Well, it's very funny. It would see that grandmasters and other very high-level chess players would often sacrifice their queen the move before they won the game. This was because the queen is a pretty powerful piece. If you can throw it into a position where it gets sacrificed, your opponent usually has to take it. And after that, you win. So the computer chess, it realized that sacrificing the queen would often be followed up by winning. Didn't realize that the nuance of the situation, so it would just throw the game every time and basically make itself lose. I find that very funny. So Deep Thought had some issues. It went through some more tests, it got a bunch more improvement. More people that actually played chess began to join the team of Deep Thought. Keep in mind, this was a very smart computer chess program, but it was nothing close to being able to take on a grandmaster. The gap was just too far. So they kept improving Deep Thought. They made improvements to it. They worked on it. Added more games. Decided to add more sequences of moves. They even got this wild new strategy where it would only look at the good moves and see what they can do with that. Severely reducing the number of stuff it had to look through before making a move. This was very, very good for it. Deep Thought continued to improve. It kept on dominating tournaments. Not only was it getting a name for itself, but it was really getting a name for itself. People would recognize it, and announcers would yell it out. Now here's an issue with announcers yelling out Deep Thought, and it gaining so much notoriety. You see, this is my favorite part of this story. Deep Thought kept on being mispronounced as Deep Throat. Announcers would go, "And the final computer chess player is Deep Throat!" They would yell that out to the crowd, and people would look around like, "What?" They would be like, Deep Thought, I mean, sorry. This would genuinely happen. People thought its name was Deep Throat, and it was really embarrassing. Deep Throat, the master computer chess player, was having some issues with that. IBM wasn't exactly happy about that. Their funder, the people going behind all that. So they decided to rename the system to what would be the final name. Deep Blue. It was now the Deep Blue Team. Deep Blue is a famous name now. The effect that Deep Blue was starting to have on the tournaments and matches that it would play were pretty high. Kasparov, while it kind of beat down Deep Blue, formerly Deep Throat, Deep Thought, really enjoyed the attention that they would get from playing games with this sort of thing. So he completely welcomed taking matches with it. He would pretty often let people challenge him with weird, wacky stuff, just because it was an opportunity for him to learn, it was an opportunity for them to learn. It was good for everybody. Now, Deep Blue started to show some issues with its computer self. It really couldn't see a lot of the stuff that people could. And even though it could play chess, the people behind it did not know how to play chess. So what would happen is if someone was losing in a game to Deep Blue didn't really know what a win or a loss was. It just knew how to play progressively better plays. It could not recognize loops or repeating moves because it didn't really look back in time. And that would result in stalemates. Because in chess, if you just repeat moves over and over again, you stalemate. You just flat out don't win. That was an issue for Deep Blue. So, yeah, the people making it had no idea how to play chess. And just this insanely smart system that was so much beyond them still couldn't get over these pretty basic human concepts, which I find very funny. Shu and his team would continue to grow, and so would Deep Blue. Deep Blue was becoming a monster. Formerly, it could recognize maybe a million moves per second. Now it could recognize 100 million per second. This was a lot of moves to analyze, and it was doing it more and more efficiently. This was scary. This was very, very scary. But it still was not as good as a grandmaster, was it? It got punked on before. It got completely destroyed by Kasparov the first time it played him. Yeah, sure, it could, you know, play 100 times as good, but does that matter when it still can't understand basic concepts? Well, this may be an advantage. You see, computers work differently from humans. Humans have one very big flaw. We have psychology, and because of that, there's one big thing in chess: psychological warfare. One thing that you can do in chess as a person is you can play moves very quickly to kind of offset your opponent, make yourself seem confident. You can move slowly to make your opponent think that there's nothing that you can do, that you're struggling, that you're desperate when actually you have the game already won 30 moves in advance. Deep Blue was not capable of feeling emotions. It could not feel fear. So, Deep Blue kind of operated differently, and it would use this to its advantage. The Deep Blue team, after improving it to a certain point, challenged Kasparov again. And this began 6 matches that were globally broadcast, and it marked a very important day. This day in the 1990s, computers and people, there was some tension building up, some fear. People heard about Deep Blue being able to analyze all these different moves and that it was winning all these tournaments and starting to beat people, but you know, there's some walls that just can't be passed. It can't possibly be better than a grandmaster, right? Maybe it would improve to somewhere near there, but the skill level was just too large, right? Their 6 games began. Deep Blue began to play against Kasparov in a whole different way. It started to gain an advantage, and it started to do something that computer chess algorithms normally didn't do. Deep Blue was no longer thinking like a normal chess computer at the time. Deep Blue was playing for itself now. It was its own entity. Shu was no longer the person in control here. Deep Blue was. And Deep Blue, thanks to incredibly developed programming, started to sacrifice pieces to gain an advantage. This was not behavior like a normal computer chess algorithm. This was something a human would do. Kasparov was not prepared for this, despite the fact that he was a grandmaster, the best chess player in the world at the time. He was a person, and this was a machine, and it wasn't playing like a machine. He was afraid. He was terrified. This got the attention of reporters. This was broadcast. People were scared of this thing. Kasparov lost, and he didn't know what to do. He looked in anguish after this game, and he stared blankly. He didn't know who to ask. He just looked briefly to Shu, and he said, "Where did I go wrong?" Shu didn't know how to answer. He didn't know chess. His machine did. This was a turning point. This was a very large turning point. If Deep Blue could win, was it smarter than a grandmaster? Was it smarter than in this field than what a human was? Was that possible? No. It couldn't possibly get over that wall, right? Regardless, Deep Blue showed that it could compete at the level of a grandmaster if it could beat Kasparov even once. In Game 2, Kasparov began to play more dull. He resorted to more traditional ways of anti-computer chess. Despite the fact that Kasparov was afraid, he managed to regain control. This was a computer, and it was a very smart computer, the smartest computer that he had ever faced, but it was a computer nonetheless. It couldn't think like a human. It still delved into those, you know, random materialistic desires sometimes. Kasparov managed to take the win. Attention was lifted from the air. Kasparov was not bound to just lose to this thing. Kasparov, even if he didn't know it, managed to take advantage of many bugs in Deep Blue's code. Bugs were hard to solve in chess. You value some things and you value other things less. And when those values are messed up, it can lead to bugs, to making bad decisions that don't make any objective sense. Kasparov got lucky this time. If this bug was solved, would another replace it, or would they just improve it with no downside? That would be scary. Kasparov didn't even know that he was facing a monster that was constantly adapting to his movements. In between games, the Deep Blue team would go and they would work on the computer to improve it, to iron out any bugs that would come out in these intensive games. And they managed to do it, but more would seem to come up. Regardless, they had made it stronger in between the second and third match that Kasparov and this thing would play. In the third game, Kasparov went in confident. More confident than before, he remembered that this was just a computer and there was nothing to worry about. But Deep Blue was not phased either. Deep Blue had no way of being phased. It would play like a monster, like it always did, and it would draw the third game. They were on equal level now. 1.5 to 1.5 was the score. This was a little terrifying. Game 4 began. Were things flipping? Would they stay the same? Would they tie? Only time could tell. In Game 4, Deep Blue was almost set to have an advantage, but Kasparov got up and he took a light water break, causing Deep Blue to go into sleep mode, which crashed the program and made it have a complete error when it saw the board again. It's like, whoa, what is this? If Deep Blue could think, that would be its response. Kasparov played without even knowing that the program had crashed, and even despite this, Deep Blue was still holding on, even if it was kind of winning before. It didn't really have a way to do that, but it also wasn't going to lose. This fourth game also went to a draw. The score was 2-2. It would immediately appear that they were equals. However, Kasparov was slowly shriveling up inside. He was gaining anxieties. He had been going down into a deep pit inside of his mind. Deep Blue was experiencing no such thing. In fact, it was only improving. It had no emotion, it had no fears, no anxieties, nothing holding it back. It was unfamiliar with the psychological warfare that chess would contain. Early on in his next game, Kasparov would offer a draw. He was scared. Even if he was slightly winning, he felt that it wasn't enough. He played, and he feared this robot. The team with Deep Blue decided to decline Kasparov's draw. They thought it was too big of an opportunity for them to win. However, as fate would have it, as soon as they declined the draw, Deep Blue began to make mistakes. It started failing. Kasparov, even though he was ridden with anxiety, still managed to win and set the score to 2-3. Kasparov was winning again. This raised his confidence. Game 6 happened, and Deep Blue choked, completely failing. The game went 2-4. Kasparov, despite feeling like he just played an alien, according to his reports. So this was kind of a failure for Deep Blue. It came close, though. Terrifyingly close. And IBM stock went way up. Very, very high. Kasparov also got a lot of clout. It kind of worked out for both of them. Deep Blue got a lot more money, and Kasparov got a lot of street cred for beating this inhuman thing. They kind of wondered, though, IBM did, what would happen if they did win? Because their stock went up a little bit, but think of the money. If they managed to beat Kasparov, they would have 100 times the stock they did. It would be undeniably incredible for them. So, following Kasparov's game, they knew what they had to improve. They started to add more intelligence to Deep Blue, made it analyze more games, but they had a secret technique that they learned about after seeing Kasparov struggle. They taught the computer psychological warfare. This seems crazy. How can you teach a computer to mess with someone mentally? But as it turns out, it is surprisingly easy. Deep Blue could become... Deep Blue was an unfeeling machine. It was beyond the concept of morality. The team behind Deep Blue decided to add some special functions to catch Kasparov off guard. During this time, they refused to show any public games with Deep Blue. He would be completely in the dark. Chess grandmasters have a certain way of playing. They plan around their opponent's strategies. Even at the highest level, everybody plays differently. Kasparov, though, was going to be in the dark. Deep Blue was going to know exactly how they played, but Kasparov wouldn't. This would be a major disadvantage. One might consider it unfair, and that would not be unfounded. Deep Blue decided to add a very simple addition that would completely change how it was viewed. They added the functionality that sometimes Deep Blue would wait. It would wait, and sometimes it wouldn't. Deep Blue could analyze millions of moves a second. It was getting very, very smart, but it still wasn't human, and it played in ways that were a little bit strange, so they decided to up that to the max. When the opponent would play a very, very strong move, Deep Blue would sometimes be able to predict it, and they had it so it would respond instantly. Imagine you spend 15 minutes of an hour game thinking about the board, all the possibilities, what to do next, and finally, you come up with a move that you think corners your opponent, that you think puts you in the winning position, and then immediately less than a second later, your opponent responds perfectly in a way that you could have never predicted. It was terrifying for the opponent. In other moves, it would wait 7 minutes at a time. It made it seem as if these dull moves were some big feat for Deep Blue. So when it did make these wild plays, it would just torment the opponent. This computer was not learning how to play just computer chess. It was learning how to play outside the game as well, act in ways that would be horrifying for a person to do. After these improvements and a lot of months of programming and making Deep Blue better and keeping it very secret, they challenged Kasparov again. Kasparov was in no position to decline. He accepted, thinking that he would be able to pull the same tactics he did before. He was frustrated, obviously, that he couldn't tell how Deep Blue was learning, because they kept it so secret and under wraps, which was kind of garbage. But regardless, he was going to play anti-computer chess and beat this computer at chess. As soon as the Deep Blue team and Kasparov got to the hotels and everything that they would be staying in to play these games, things were bad. The hotels were very badly managed. They were hot, stuffy, sweaty. There was no privacy. This was bad for both the Deep Blue team and Kasparov, but Kasparov was the human player playing. He was getting a massive disadvantage from this. While the Deep Blue team was getting messed up, Deep Blue itself would be fine. Kasparov, on the other hand, was going to be stressed, anxiety-ridden. He was going to feel more hopelessness. He needed to plan out moves like Deep Blue didn't need to, and with no privacy, that would be very difficult. Deep Blue had immeasurable focus. Kasparov was human. This was bad. Kasparov still had strategies up his sleeve. It would just be more difficult. He was still confident that he would win, though. At first, in their first game of this new set, he gave it nothing to attack, theorizing that Deep Blue would, not seeing anything, decide to weaken its own position to try and improve its chances of winning. It was a form of anti-computer chess that you didn't normally need to entail, but Deep Blue was so advanced that he felt that he needed to resort to this strategy. Deep Blue, not having any pieces on Kasparov's board to attack, started to weaken its own position, just as he predicted. Regardless, it still had a strong defense, but eventually it choked, opening its defenses with a pawn for seemingly no reason. It lost. Kasparov was winning. This was good. It solved a lot of his anxieties and made him feel like he was playing against a fool. This was only a computer, after all. In the second game, Kasparov was going second. Now, when you're going second in chess, that puts you at a slight disadvantage. Your opponent, if they can predict your moves, will be one step ahead of you because they were one turn ahead at the beginning of the game. This was a little bit stressful, but Kasparov thought that he could just continue playing anti-computer chess. This was a little bit difficult for him since he wasn't really used to that, so he said he was playing anti-computer chess and he figured he would be winning, but at the same time, he was playing anti-Kasparov chess as well. He didn't know how to play this quite well, but he was also the best chess player in the world. So, he kept through. Now what does Deep Blue do when it's faced with the issues of being treated like a computer and somebody trying to take advantage of its computer weaknesses? It starts playing like a human does. Deep Blue was making moves like nobody had ever seen. The reporters were going crazy. Deep Blue should not be playing like a human. It should not be sacrificing pieces to gain an advantage. That's just not what computers do. But Deep Blue was smarter than that. It wasn't like the other computers. It was stronger, more capable, unbelievable. Deep Blue stressed Kasparov out. Long before the match had even ended, Kasparov was already in another state in his mind. This was nothing like the computer he played in the first game. What was going on? He started to make weak moves. He threw the game. Deep Blue destroyed him. The score was 1-1. They were now tied. Kasparov was panicking, and he voiced his concerns. He implied that Deep Blue was cheating. This didn't feel like he was playing the same opponent as before. This felt like he was playing some new entity. What had happened was, in the previous game, Deep Blue had a bug. Deep Blue was riddled with bugs. Whenever it would make a move, sometimes it was miscalculate. Something would go wrong in its tree of responses that it had. Unlike a person, it couldn't tell after it made the move that it was making a mistake, so they had to go in and manually fix it. So Deep Blue, with these experimental changes it had been going through for all these months, still had some problems that were rearing their head in these games. However, these issues were an advantage. Kasparov had no idea what was going on. It felt like he was not only playing against an alien opponent, but one that he couldn't even tell if it was the same one as the previous game. Even when it was predictable, it would sometimes mess up and then completely throw Kasparov off. The anxiety from this, was Deep Blue making genius decisions when it made an unexpected move, or was it having a bug? Do you respond as if the computer is making a mistake? Does it have some brilliant strategy that he just couldn't see? It made him overthink every single move that it would make. Keep in mind that this was combined with the already present psychological warfare additions that Deep Blue had, that Kasparov did not know about. Kasparov was distressed. The next game played out. He felt like he was playing against a black hole, he said. They drew the game, but Kasparov still felt like he was at a disadvantage. He was being tormented. The Deep Blue team, which now had a lot of IBM people on it, were not very nice to Kasparov. Kasparov would ask for games, any kind of sample of the games maybe he just played against the computer, but they would not give it to him. They would often make very petty responses. He would ask for maybe a sequence of moves, and they would give him one singular board state just to make it more frustrating to him. Kasparov was not happy with this. They had this computer that had all these recorded games on it, and they could give it to him, but they didn't, which made it a lot more difficult for him. Normally, as a grandmaster, you know, your games are public. That's kind of how it works. Nobody just does this. It was bad sportsmanship, but they weren't chess players, so they didn't care. Deep Blue didn't care. It was a computer. This went on. Game 4 occurred, and another draw went on. Kasparov didn't really know what to do. Deep Blue was still buggy, and it would crash. Sometimes it would fall asleep in the middle of a game, but even then, it would still be able to hold some kind of advantage. Game 5 went on. Another draw. They were now at 2.5 to 2.5, tied completely for a match-winning point. This had gone on dramatically, more dramatically than the previous set of games. This was now down to whoever won this match. Game 6 began. Kasparov had a plan. He would play a sequence of moves, a very special sequence of moves, a sequence that no computer would be able to respond to. In chess, there are multiple different advantages you can have. You can have an advantage on the board itself, you can have an advantage in the materials you have, or of course where your pieces are and what they are. Kasparov would make a sequence of moves where Deep Blue would be given the opportunity to sacrifice a knight for a pawn, but it would gain a massive board advantage if it did this. And Kasparov, if they did not take that trade, would gain a massive advantage himself. Normally, you would consider that risky. Nobody would really do that against another grandmaster, but against an even experienced human player, people would pretty often not trade a knight for a pawn. It was just dumb to, on the surface. Even looking several moves deep, it was almost impossible to see how that could ever give you an advantage. You could search a million turns, and you might not even see it. You could search 100 million, and it would not be known to you. This computer would not be able to see it. Kasparov took this risk. He allowed Deep Blue to go in, and he gave it the offer. Trade your knight for a pawn, or face the consequences. Any normal computer chess program would not want to trade a knight for a pawn. Most people would not take that trade. Deep Blue did, and people were shocked, scared. They feared it. It shouldn't know how to do that. It should not know. However, Deep Blue's team suspected that Kasparov would go for a trick like this. They specially programmed that if it recognized this position, that it would take that trade. Even if they couldn't have Deep Blue recognize what advantages this would bring, they programmed it. The one flaw that Kasparov found that he thought he could take advantage of was patched up with a band-aid solution, one that would lead to his loss. Kasparov didn't know how to play after that. He lost. And the games ended 2.5 to 3.5 with Deep Blue winning, and the world was terrified. IBM's stock rose over $10 billion. They gained a lot of money. From Shu's ambitions and making chip test to Deep Thought to Deep Blue, it had gone from something laughed at to something feared. After this game, things continued. Life went on. IBM got their money. Shu got his money. He just continued living. Kasparov continued to play. His passion for chess would slowly decline over the years. He had the highest ELO rating out of everybody for a while until he didn't, and sometime after that, he retired. Deep Blue, though, was not human. It had completed its purpose, and therefore was disassembled, being split into parts. The disassembled bits of Deep Blue now sits in a museum for onlookers to look at and think about what it has done. Shu moved on as well. He got a job with Microsoft, and he lived a pretty good life. Nowadays, chess computers have expanded way past what Deep Blue could do. Nowadays, there's a program called Stockfish, which can beat any human player every single time. It's more advanced than Deep Blue could ever be. Is chess dead after this, though? No. Surprisingly, these computer chess programs simply pushed the skill level higher. People could now analyze games with an even higher intensity. They could play against opponents who were better than them and would probably beat them every single time. And losing teaches you a lot. These chess programs are way beyond what a grandmaster could be, and it pushed people's skills significantly higher. Before, people would see computer chess players as just worse versions of human players. I mean, it was incredible and amazing to have something automatically play chess, but there's no way it could ever compare to a human. Nowadays, that's flipped, where humans can never dream to compare with these machines. So, that's the story of Deep Blue. Its rise, its terror, and its ending. What's the moral of the story? I mean, there really isn't one. Not really. I mean, it was just a thing that happened in real life. It was not designed to have a moral, just a thing that happened. So, take what you want out of it. Against us, the computer always wins. But unlike us, when it does, it feels absolutely nothing.